This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
Take care of your property with equipment you can count on, like the Kubota BX and LO1 series compact tractors, part of our under 100 horsepower tractor lineup, rated number one for reliability, and Z-Series mowers and Sidekick utility vehicles, where durability meets speed. Visit your local Kubota dealer for a demo today. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Visit GoKubota.com for a dealer near you.
And welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. Joining me right now is a very special guest. It's Richard Buxton. He is a freelance journalist who actually covered Marco Silva at Everton. So he's on today so we could talk about his experience of covering Silva. And after we learn about his time at Everton, we then will transition to talk about his potential at Fulham. Will it work at Fulham? I'll get Richard's thoughts on that. If you are watching live, feel free to ask us questions. We'll try to get it during the show. And also, if you're watching on YouTube, please do subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be a huge help for us, help other Fulham supporters find us. Okay. Well, it's time to introduce my guest, Richard. It's been a while. Welcome back to Cottage Talk. I look forward to getting your thoughts on this hire of Marco Silva as the new Fulham head coach.
Cheers, Russ. It should be an interesting discussion because, as you say, I had a bit of an experience with Marco Silva and not always great, but I think there are positives to his appointments.
Okay, great. So what we're going to do here, like I said, we're just going to start getting your background of potentially dealing with Marco Silva and also his time at Everton, because it's interesting, his rise. You know, it started, we're talking about in England, at Hull. He went to Watford. There was definitely a parting of ways at Watford. We definitely want to talk about that a little bit. Yeah. And then his time at Everton. But I want to concentrate right now your experience of covering him at Everton. Let's start from the beginning.
Well, I mean, Everton had a real... It was a long-term vision to bring Marco Silva in. Obviously, when they had this disastrous season... A disjointed season, you could say, which started with Ronald Koeman spending a lot of big money, but unfortunately it was a very chaotic strategy. And then Koeman left Everton in October 2017, and Everton spent about 5 weeks trying to appoint a successor, and they settled, albeit reluctantly, on Sam Allardyce, who was a firefighter, as we all know, and you know, keeps teams in the Premier League. I don't think Everton were really in danger at that time. I think when you look at David Unsworth, who was a former player, he's a caretaker, he's quite a highly regarded youth coach at the club, took over. He actually got the club up to about 12, I think it was, just before Allardyce came in, the day before, in fact. He got them up to sort of, you know, mid-table, respectable mid-table, should we say, rather than being in the lower half. So Allardyce's job was easier, and got them to eighth, and did respectably despite having the fans on his back. But obviously he wasn't the object of affection. That was Marco Silva, because Marco Silva had done such a great job coming in at Watford. And then around the time that Everton showed an interest in Marco Silva, whether it was informally or officially, the Watford season sort of disintegrated, and Silva was sacked in January 2018. And Watford, which I've got to say, this is the first time I've seen anything of this nature in the Premier League, Watford actually called Everton out and said, this is the reason why we're sacking him, because results have suffered, and we believe it is a result of this interest from another Premier League club. So Everton sort of, if Everton went short on Marco Silva then, they had to be now, because they were basically, this guy, go and get him. And Allardyce was never going to stay. The length of his 18-month contract, you know, he was sacked within 6 months. Job done. Nice payoff for him. So Silva came in, and Silva potentially, he was a good manager and he was a bad manager, and it would depend on sort of what way the wind blew. But I mean, some of the first season, some of the performances were fairly respectable. I mean, there's some notable ones and some not great ones. From my experience, I always found him trying to be quite clever. He sort of, when we had the press conferences at Finch Farm, they'd have it in separate parts. They'd have a TV, a agency breakout, a paper breakout, a Sunday paper breakout sometimes. And I was in the agency breakout, and I always found when I asked him a question, it wasn't a loaded question, it wasn't designed to get headlines, it was just a sort of general, you know, doing my job, asking questions about stuff. You could see as you asked him the question, he'd start cracking up, because you could see he'd already formulated an answer. And one of his favourite phrases, and I to this day I cannot get it out of my head, is one of his favourite phrases that he used in every medium, whether it was newspapers, whether it was radio, whether it was agency, whether it was TV. He would always say the word, "I understand your question," and then just completely rattle off his own response as a sort of like, you know, this is the way I do things. And it's sort of, in a weird sort of way, it sort of brings it right a bit full circle this week. It reminds me a bit of Rafael Benitez, who's obviously the new Everton manager now. Benitez had this habit of trying to be quite clever and trying to not give the journalist the answer they wanted. And Silva seems to be very much like that. But I think it was only really his second season that it started going really badly wrong. I think he emulated Allardyce with a sort of top-half finish. And there were some good displays. But I don't know if it was probably in the style he wanted to play. I think he's quite partial to a 4-3-3 system. But Everton tended to set up with a 4-2-3-1 a lot of the time, and that was down to making sure they had a midfield barrier, a bit of protection, and it worked quite well. But obviously the second season it unravelled for a number of reasons, and if we're being truthful, I think he probably should have been sacked sooner than he was. He was sacked after a Merseyside derby, a 5-2 hammering by Liverpool, who were on the way to winning the Premier League title, just reigning European champions. So not a huge disgrace, but the man of the performance was bad. But the right was on the wall the one before that. I mean, I was at Goodison when they lost to Norwich City. Quite a good Norwich side, it has to be said. And you know, we've seen it come back up to the Premier League very quickly. But I think the right was on the wall then. And then they went to Leicester City, who were on an upward trajectory, and it took it down to stoppage time. It'd been a bit of a seesaw game. And for a minute, they lost it. And that, for me, I think that was probably the tipping point. I think he was on the highest enough, thinking you knew he wasn't going to win against Liverpool. He had good games against Liverpool in the past, I have to say, but that was probably the tipping point, that Leicester game. And then the final nail in the coffin came against Liverpool, and he was, you know, you reflect on his time and you think it could have gone a lot better, and certain things didn't fall from him in terms of recruiting and other matters, which I'm sure we'll touch upon. But in terms of, you know, how you reflect on Marco Silva's time, I think the biggest feeling is a sense of regret that he never learned his lessons, because certain things kept happening and he kept carrying on the same path of, you know, unstinting self-belief in his own abilities. He didn't address the problem, you know, there were issues that he didn't fix it. But, I mean, I read an interview he did with Fabrizio Romano from The Guardian a few weeks ago. And he was very, very, still very personable. And, you know, he said he was trying to learn German with a view of potentially going into the Bundesliga or the Austrian Bundesliga at some stage. But he never said he didn't expect that to be an immediate transition. He thought he might have to wait a while, you know, build up his stock. But getting back into the Premier League is quite interesting, because I thought after the past three experiences of obviously he couldn't keep hold, and he came in against a backdrop of quite strong animosity from a lot of the English media you know, I thought after that you'd think anyone would be put off by that. You know, you've seen various managers managing England, and then I think I don't fancy being, you know, dealing with an extra penalty basis, especially when they're coming out of the, and you know, slander me when I haven't even got the job. I think that was the biggest thing with Silver. And then he went to Watford, which was a curious one, because Watford aren't, compared to Fulham, Watford, they're not really the most stable club in terms of building foundations and building a legacy. I mean, you look at, you know, the turnover of managers there, although it has been very successful, and you could be point to Chelsea light in a way in terms of that sort of high turnover. It's not a place where you really build a legacy or build a solid foundation that's going to last more than maybe 3 years at best. So when he came to Everton, which was already a club that was looking for an identity, it seemed, again, it seemed strange. But again, as I say, because Everton had pursued him, whether through the back channels or whether through, you know, coach, they felt they were duty-bound to bring him in. And he fitted their model at the time. Obviously, they just appointed Marcel Brands as their director of football, who still is in post at the moment. So it felt like a good fit at the time. But as I say, a lot of things didn't really work, and some of them were his fault and some of them were just unfortunately down to fate. So I think he can look back on that time as being a combination of failings and maybe a few factors that were out of his control.
Okay. I want to go back. You said something that actually was interesting and a little bit concerning for me. When we talk about Fulham in the second half of the show, I'm going to mention about Parker, because we're going to compare Silva Ball to Parker Ball. That's what we're going to do, which is going to be fun. But before we get there, one of the criticisms I have for Scott Parker, Richard, was his inability to change from the way that he plays, meaning that learning from his mistakes, basically doing the same thing. In your experience with Silva, it sounds like he has a similar belief that this is the way he does it, and he's going to continue to do it, and doesn't really change to, say, the opponent. Does he change to the opponent? Is he a proactive manager or is he a reactive manager? That was a question I was going to have for you, because Parker is extremely reactive, meaning that he'll make a chess move after the other manager has made a move. Jokanović used to be proactive, which I always liked. When he noticed something was wrong, he would change it. Where does Silva fall in the proactive and reactive categories?
Probably more sort of proactive. I think when he sets a game plan up, he sets it up from the outset. I mean, I think two of the biggest successes, should we say, of his tenure were the two Merseyside derby games in 2018-19, when Everton really clung on at Anfield until a real freaky moment where a ball goal was Jordan Pickford misjudged the flight of the ball and basically tipped it off the crossbar and into Divock Origi's path in the 93rd minute. So that was unfortunate. And I think Everton did exact a bit of revenge, because when he played in 3 months later at Goodison, it was a real cagey Merseyside derby. And I've got to say, I think Everton really gave a good shot there. And that proved in the long run to be one of the games where Liverpool lost the title that season. So I think Silva does set games, a game plan up from the outset, fairly well, but when he misjudges it is when it comes undone. I mean, the one I mentioned before was the Norwich game. The in-game management was awful. I mean, in-game management is not Marco Silva's forte by any means, and also organisation doesn't work. It's very, even with players who are capable of you know, exuding a bit of presence in the air, like Yerry Mina particularly and Michael Keane, it just didn't work. Defending set pieces was a huge concern. I mean, you'd like to think in the 18 months or nearly 2 years he's been out of work, you'd like to think he's been working on that sort of strategy, because you can't stop still in management even if you're out of a job. So hopefully he's ironed out those kinks, because they were the biggest problems. There was no game plan once they fell behind. Okay. There was no strategy for defending set pieces.
I've heard that.
I mean, it feels very similar to when Roberto Martinez was in. There was Leon Osman was one of the stalwarts of the Everton team. He'd been there since David Moyes came in, and Osman retired a few years ago. But before he did, he wrote a book and he explained that Martinez's assistant, Graeme Jones, who's now with the England team and with Newcastle United, didn't believe in practicing set pieces in the training grounds, which you know, at any stage of football, backline management, you know, if you're post-war, you should be practicing set piece strategies. Absolutely. Whether you're delivering them or defending them, and there was no appetite then. And it did feel like history was repeating itself there with Marco Silva, because the amount of times Everton got caught out on a set piece was absolutely staggering. And, you know, as I say, he can probably claim a bit of mitigating circumstance with Silva's way in terms of performances, in terms of transfer strategy, in terms of other aspects. But that's a basic essential of football management. You've got to be able to organise your defence. It doesn't matter if you're very... if you're ultra defensive, you should be absolutely a master at it. If you're a bit more free flowing in your attacking approach, you should still be able to guard against it. Silva was neither a defensive master, and he wasn't, you know, playing expansive football. But yet, Everton was still getting caught out on both counts, because whichever approach you took, with the odd exception, they were getting caught out on set pieces at least once or twice a game. And invariably, you know, they conceded from them.
Yeah, and listen, that's a concern I've already seen from Fulham supporters, because they remember that and they've seen the statistics of the goals they've given up from set pieces. So they know it's an issue, and they're asking that question, could that be a problem at Fulham? And based on what you're telling me, it could potentially be. But over these 18 months, hopefully he has learned from that, and maybe we won't be seeing that frailty and they'll be practicing set pieces. It's funny, Fulham were actually very good, Richard, on set pieces. So they actually have the players that can handle it. But the question will be, will they be in training? Will they be working on defending set pieces? I certainly hope that they will. But this is a criticism that I've heard of him. And, you know, that goes along with his style of play. I've seen his style of play listed as, you've already mentioned, like a 4-3-3. And obviously it morphs a little bit. But you and I were messaging back and forth. Just tell the Fulham supporters what they can expect from his style when he comes to Fulham.
I think it'll depend on the players he has at his disposal. If he's inheriting a good attacking crop of players, he might be a bit more conscious of playing a 4-3-3, which is, as I say, his preference. But yeah. I think at Everton he had more defensive-minded players in midfield. He had Idrissa Gueye, who's now at PSG.
Yeah.
Really incredible set, and you have to make the most of that. And the way Gay played, he needed to have someone alongside to help break up that play. So for me, it was always a case of he needed to sort of tailor his game plan to the needs of the squad he had. Whereas if he has the players at Fulham where he can play a 4-3-3, given that the Championship is a more open league, that might have scope for, you know, playing in an expansive way, which we saw in dispatches at Everton. So as I say, it'll depend on how Everton are fixed, for how Fulham are fixed recruitment wise, and how they and sort of the demand of the Championship, because we know the Championship is a tough league.
Oh yeah,
it's a very tough league, and also even though you have playoffs and so forth, the expectancy is similar to what you'd have at a Premier League club who has designs of being in the Europa League spots. To get up to those top six places, you've got to be, you know, you've got to have a really good set of results. And, you know, we saw with Brentford, who obviously didn't progress at Fulham's expense. You know, they didn't. They played some great football, but ultimately they lost to, in the final, a better team in Fulham. They've come up now. But you can't just have a philosophy and hope for the best. There has to be something to back it up, something tangible. So, you know, if he has the players, or if he recruits smartly, he can play 4-3-3, but he can also play the 4-2-3-1 for the more cagey games, shall we say, the games where you're going to need to sort of sit tight and nick a 1-0 win, or hold on to you know a goals draw if it's a heavyweight opponent in the Championship this season. So I think there's definitely a way to be versatile under Silva. I just think it's going to depend on the players he has, and as I said to you off air, wingers are going to be a big option, whether it's you know out and out wingers or attacking fullbacks, because that's where a lot of Everton's best play came from. Seamus Coleman, obviously, a mainstay of many managers going back to the David Moyes period. He looked incredible from right back when he was given that freedom. Luka Dinje, who came in Silva's first season, is now, in my opinion, one of the best left backs in Europe, one of the best attacking left backs in Europe. I know people will challenge Luke Shaw, Trent Alexander-Arnold, I mean, even Reece James, Kieran Trippier maybe even. sorry, not a repeater. Ben Chilwell, sorry. There's so many England fullbacks at the moment going around. You lose count of them, but there's some great attacking fullbacks in the Premier League. Yep. And on the left side, I think you're looking at having Digne's probably one of the best. And I think a lot of that is down to Marco Silva, creating something that, you know, what we used to call the Baynard access, which used to be Leighton Baines, yep, and Stephen Pienaar, and he linked up, yep, really well with Richarlison on that side, so that really helps. So I think the left-hand side was obviously Silva's preference because he had the players there who were capable of playing down that flank. Right-hand side, not so much, because it was only really Seamus Coleman, but I think wing play, as I say, will be so important because that is where most of the goals are.
That's very interesting, and we'll talk about that because I'll ask you when we talk about form that exact subject about the fullbacks and the wingers, because I find that interesting that you brought that up. But I still want to concentrate on Silva's time at Everton, and let's talk about this, Richard. I'm curious because again, I've asked this about Parker. I don't know how many Fulham players actually got better over the course of the season under his coaching. How about the Everton players? Did they improve under Silva?
I think improve is a very difficult way to gauge with this Everton squad. I mean, I think when I was discussing with another Everton fan, when Carlin talked about the sort of the nature of Everton squad for his successor, and the person I was speaking to described it as a Frankenstein squad, because it had the sort of the fingerprints of not just various managers, he had the fingerprints of various people within the club. I mentioned about the Ronald Koeman half season where it all unraveled for him. Everton signed three number 10s, Wayne McConnell, Gavin Sigurdsson, and you could probably pinpoint who signed who in that, because Davy Klaassen seems also inevitably that seems like a Ronald Koeman type signing, obviously former Ajax player, Dutch international, quite highly regarded. He came in. Wayne Rooney seemed very sentimental, seemed like Bill Kemmerich, the chairman, was behind that one. Yeah. And then Gylfi Sigurdsson, who's outlasted them all, seemed to be Marcel Brand's predecessor, seemed to be looking for a proven number 10. So you had this weird situation where Everton were playing three number 10s, often at the same time. Silva was inheriting, albeit he wasn't inheriting Klaassen and Rooney, he was inheriting a lot of players who were there from the Roberto Martinez era. Leighton Baines was still around the squad, he was obviously from the David Moyes era, and the Koeman era. Allardyce brought in two players in the January window. So, you know, how you improve players who you didn't really want in the first place is difficult to gauge. In terms of the ones who did come in, Richarlison, I think, undoubtedly improved.
Okay.
I think Richarlison had he had a really good start in the Premier League with Watford under Silva. And he still kept scoring when Silva left, but he definitely raised the bar at Everton. Luka Digne, I think, you know, he was coming off a bit of a difficult spell at Barcelona where he hadn't been able to dislodge Jordi Alba at left back and was ultimately seen as a surplus to requirements, and his confidence and his technical ability seems to be vastly improved. I mean, I do watch a lot of Barcelona, I won't make any bones about that. So I was familiar with Digne, and I thought he was unfortunate. He signed Andre Gomes as well, and Yerimino also from Barcelona. The former on a loan with a permanent deal agreed the following summer. Gomes is a difficult player to gauge. I don't think he really improved from what he was at Barcelona, from what I saw of him. I think he was probably more burdened by the price tag, because I remember when Barcelona signed him, there was a package with Valencia that was upwards of €75 million on the basis that he would win X amount of Champions League, X amount of La Liga titles. Whether he'd win one of the major competitions while he was a Barcelona player for his country, whether he'd win the Ballon d'Or. So I think pressure probably was more on him at Barcelona than Everton. But he did. He put in some good displays, but then he came back from a really horrific injury. If you remember the one with Son Heung-min tackling him. And probably hasn't been the same player since. Yerimino, I think, probably improved more under Carlo Ancelotti than Marco Silva. And in terms of the ones who came in at the start of his final half season, Alex Iwobi, Fabian Delph has already played. There wasn't a great amount of progress there, I wouldn't say. I mean, even one of the players we brought in, Bernard, on a free transfer, sort of dipped in and out, though. So you couldn't really gauge players who had improved. I think Jordan Pickford, even though Jordan Pickford is getting a lot of credit now, I don't think that was down to Marcus Silva, because I think he had a lot of poor displays. I think there were more bad displays than good on the whole. But and I think the same could be said always, like, to Michael Keane.
Yeah.
I think Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the first half of the 2019-20 season looked like he was going to become the player that he ultimately has become now. But I don't think that was down to Silva. I think Silva kind of had to give him a run out because the alternatives were very, very poor. Santosin was in and out of the team. They brought in Moise Kean from Juventus, who was a coup, but ultimately didn't get much of a look in, and it got to the point where Everton lost to Manchester City and you were wondering, well, why is he not getting a look in? And it didn't really make sense, and obviously he ended up going out on loan to PSG, and then now it looks like he's probably going to be going out on loan again. So it seems like there were players who were signed to fit the profile of what the club wanted under Silva, so didn't really have any use for them. And I think Keane is probably one of the biggest examples, because I think he fits that sort of young, promising aspect who can be developed, but Silva didn't seem to have much appetite to actually develop him. So in terms of who you gauge as he progressed, I don't think there was many. Apart from probably the ones on the left-hand side being Dinier and Richarlison, and maybe possibly Gomez, but probably a bit of mitigation for Gomez because of where he came from and the expectancy that was on him.
Okay. All right. A couple more questions about his time at Everton, then we'll move on and talk about Fulham. We're talking about director of football, because right now, the way things are at Fulham, Tony Khan is the director of football, unless things have changed that we're not aware of. You know, again, fans are hoping that he moves aside, but right now he is still the director of football. So with that said, how did Silva work with the director of football with Everton? Was there a good camaraderie there? Did it work well? Because the way that things are structured as of right now, he would be working with Tony Khan and the recruitment team. And how did that work at Everton?
It worked quite well. I don't think it was fractious by any means. I think you look at obviously I mentioned the Frankenstein squad that he inherited, and obviously there was. I mean, Everton made this mistake of hiring a director of football and a manager before Silva came in. They were completely at odds with each other. They hired Steve Walsh as the director of football, who was who'd obviously been part of the Leicester team that won the Premier League against all odds. And he had done an incredible job as a talent spotter, but he had never been a director of football. So when he came in and went alongside Ronald Koeman, the recruitment strategy sort of worked for a season. And in summer 2017, when everyone felt a bit more comfortable with each other, everything just sort of descended into chaos. You know, as I say, there were different people buying different players, a cohesive partnership, because everyone was putting their own slant on things and putting their own players forwards. And that is the problem when you hire a manager who is wanted by the owner and a director of football who is a flavour of the month, and vice versa. If you bring in a director of football who is you know, a long-term target like Marcel Brand was, and then a flavour of the month, which Silva was not, by the way. He was flavour at the time he came in at Everton. But when you make those mistakes, then it's going to be a recipe for disaster. So they were on a good footing at the beginning, because Brand knew how to unearth talents, and Silva wanted players who fitted his style. And maybe, you know, we were sort of, you know, when Everton come up as a viable destination for players, it tends to be players who are either on the cusp of going spherish, case in point Romelu Lukaku, Idrissa Gueye, or people who are on the downward trajectory. I mean, you go down the list, you know, Phil Neville, James Rodriguez, I think, is a good example. Obviously, you know, there were reasons why he came in, but, you know, bringing players in who have seen better days, who have been at bigger clubs, have had greater success, and now sort of, you know, they're past the peak. So I think the fact that he could get players like Dinier, Gomez, and Mina in the opening, and obviously Richarlison falls into the former category of being a player whose stock will go higher and higher and higher. And it does, you know, it remains to be seen how long he will be at Everton. I think he said last season that he could bear to bring himself to stay out for another year, and people saying, well, that's a bit strange comment to make. You haven't had a great season, but obviously you can see where Richarlison's career path is going, and he obviously believes that it's only a matter of time before he follows in the footsteps of Gueye, Lukaku, I mean, even Marouane Fellaini, people like that. So to recruit these players is pretty, you know, who hadn't really reached a peak, and it's sort of become a bit unloved and a bit unfancied because of what had happened to Barcelona. Which, by the way, that was some of the signings that Barcelona made in the period where like Diego Gomez, Mina came in. There was very nonsense. They were very nonsensical. It was a case of they were just signing players with no logical reason, really. I mean, the basic thought process was there, but when it was executed, it just didn't work. So the fact that Everton could pick these players up was a great boost for Silva and for Marcel Brands. And I think that's probably brought Marcel Brands a bit of goodwill amongst the Everton fans, because there are some who question him, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But I think everyone was so desperate for him to stay on beyond his contract expiring in the summer, that Everton were happy to give him a 3-year deal, because most supporters feel that in the main he's done a good job. But
okay.
Of course, there would be arguments that they could have done better. So, in terms of working as a director of football model, I think Silva's well suited to that. Probably better than a lot of Everton managers. I think probably better than Ronald Koeman.
Okay.
Definitely better than Sam Allardyce, who believes in autonomy, and even bringing it full circle now with Rafa Benitez. Benitez is another one who believes in autonomy. So, I think Silva will work quite well in a director of football model, more so than probably other managers who Fulham have had in the past few years.
Well, that's important for Fulham, Richard, because they will have a director of football. They are bringing in a director of scouting. Now, will that morph into a combined job? We're not sure at this point. Like I said, right now, the director of football is Tony Khan, and he would have to work with him. And if he's comfortable working in that structure, that's okay. But let me just follow that up and ask you this question, because, again, I was watching Talk Sport this morning, a video from there, and they were talking about Watford. And that basically Watford brought in all these players to play the way that Silva wanted, and then of course he leaves. So they bought the players for Silva. So again, this is a phrase here in Boston from a coach shopping for the groceries, picking the groceries. So did he have a say, meaning bringing in the players for picking the groceries? It sounds like he had some input on that with Everton.
I think he did, yeah, and I go back to the Watford situation with Richarlison. I actually interviewed Richarlison back in the last season, and when I was doing my research, one of the things that came up was that Richarlison was all set to go to Ajax before Watford came, and Marco Silva sort of went and spoke to him, obviously they both speak Portuguese, and said, no, you're coming with me, this will be better for you. And I think he's been proven right. The Premier League has been, you know, Richarlison has benefited from the Premier League, so I think Marco Silva deserves credit for that. I mean, the thing about it is that when they're saying that, I mean, I know Talk about have a bit of a dubious reputation in this country, but when they're saying that Silva didn't, Watford built signed players purely for Silva's benefit, I seem to recall they didn't do too badly under Javi Garcia when he came in. And that one sticks with me quite vividly, because I actually went and interviewed one of the players who'd been at Watford for a while, Craig Cathcart, when they were in the midst of this really good run where they beat Tottenham. Where they'd given United a scare, and they were about to take on Liverpool, so it was, you know, it didn't work out long term. But the tools that Grassi inherited from Silva, they weren't you know, rigid components. They were actually, you know, very flexible, very sort of enticing options that you can use. So I think Silva definitely would have had a say in the players he brought into Everton. As much as he did with Watford. I think the issue was that it didn't really come off. Thinking specifically about Kurt Zouma, who had been on loan with Everton in Silva's first season and done really well, and they'd got a respectable top half finish. But Chelsea didn't want to do business. Chelsea didn't want to sell Zouma. They weren't interested in another loan because they clearly had a bigger plan for him long term, as we've now seen. So that left Everton a bit short defensively. Silva also includes Zaha from Crystal Palace, who doesn't really fit the young, upcoming model that Everton are trying to implement now and have been under Marcel Brands' directorship. But he's clearly a player who Silva liked, and it was obviously quite an interesting moment on the opening weekend where Silva made the beeline for Zaha and gave him an embrace at full time, and that was seen as a sign that Zaha being coming, but Palace wouldn't sell. And for good reason, you know, Zaha is their talisman, he's one of their best players, and he has been for a number of years. So there's some players that Silva wanted to sign, which I don't think Everton would have stopped him signing.
Right.
I think if they had done that, they probably would have been on a collisions course with Brands and Silver, and maybe even, you know, people like Bill Kenwright. The real, the ones who put the strings at the club, obviously Kenwright's been there a long time. Matt Farham is here, he's the majority investor and has been since 2016. So I think Silver has to pick the groceries Tuesday, obviously that term. So I think if your manager doesn't pick it, then, or have a say in picking it, then that's a problem. I don't think you should be letting the manager dictate the entire transfer.
Sure.
Policy if you had a role. I know York across the park at Liverpool, and Liverpool have a real, really interesting setup with, they had a manager.
Yep.
And then they brought in the sporting director. But weirdly, yeah. even though the manager owns players, the sporting director will still have an input and clearly share the same vision. So everyone's pulling in the same direction, and we've seen the benefits they've reaped from that. You've got to give them to that. So I think there was always going to be some sort of commonality between Brands and Silver, and I don't think it was a case of, as we've seen at other clubs, namely Chelsea, Manchester United, where the hierarchy picks players and says to the manager, right, you've got him, we like him, deal with it. There's nothing like that. So I think that probably bodes well for Fulham in terms of having, you know, Silver knowing his own mind and picking players that suit the style and the profile that the club wants to pursue. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. If the new scouting director, or if Khan decides they want to get someone who's a free agent and fling him at Silver, if Silver doesn't like it, Silver won't play him. It's simple as that. So whoever picks these players, the manager will decide whether they play, and Silver's very much in that bracket for me.
Okay, well, that's actually very interesting you say that, because ultimately he'll decide who plays, and so in a way he will have a say on the players that are coming and going, because he'll be determining who's going to be playing. So that's very interesting, Richard. Okay, coming up next, we're going to concentrate on Silva at Fulham now and get Richard's thoughts on will it work. Okay, Richard, let's now concentrate on the hiring of Silva. Twofold. What I find interesting in the announcement, Shad Khan went to Portugal to basically, it sounds like to me, to talk to Silva and potentially recruit him to Fulham. It sounds like to me, again, there all the speculation of these different managers, Cooper, Wilder, Eddie Howe. It sounds like to me he was their choice, because, again, I don't think Shad Khan flies to Portugal to visit Silva if they weren't highly interested in him. So they bring him in, and again, I'm fascinated with how this is going to work. I actually still doing a poll on this, and it is highly in his favor of approval. His approval with Fulham supporters so far, over 300 results, is highly in his favor. So, but there are people that are skeptical of this because of his past. We'll talk about that in a bit. But overall, I just want to get your thoughts, Richard. Do you think Silva can work at Fulham?
I think he can work at Fulham. I think he can work very well if he has, one, learned his lessons from the time that he spent at Everton, at Watford, at Hull, because they are three different clubs who give an eye-opening experience of what it needs, what's required to not only stay in the Premier League, but also compete in the Premier League. So to get back into the Premier League, you need a manager who has ideas which are, I think, probably a bit more out of the ordinary in terms of, you know, he's been out of the game for nearly 2 years. Obviously, he might have done a lot of homework, I'd say, on fixing the in-game management issues. Maybe we'll find more investment, maybe more heavy pressing, which was something we didn't really see a lot of at Everton because of the restrictions of the squad. And as you say, you know, clearly Khan wanted to get him and made the effort of going all the way to Portugal. And, you know, we know with COVID there is obviously a lot of hoops you have to jump through and restrictions. Yeah. You know, so if you're gonna go all out for a manager and you're gonna go make a play for him that way, pretty emphatic statements. I mean, I know you mentioned about there was Wilder and Cooper, and Cooper probably on the fact that he obviously got Swansea to the playoffs seemed like a good fit, but as you know, when you get a manager from another club, and this is unfortunately something Everton have encountered in the past, when you hire a manager from another club, it gets messy. I think Everton ended up having to pay about £4 million to Watford because in Watford's minds, Silva had become distracted, disengaged because of Everton's interest, and their season unravelled, and you know, they managed to keep it on track in the end and stay up, but they believe that Everton was the root cause of their on-field demise that season. So Everton, have sort of avoided those sorts of avenues. And I think a lot of clubs do that now, especially the ones who haven't got the big money, you know, the ones who are outside the Premier League top six. I mean, even look at, I mean, Tottenham have just hired Nuno, who used to be at Wolves, a free agent. Everton have hired Benitez, a free agent. Palace are potentially hiring Patrick Vieira, free agents. So going for managers who don't have any ties, it's a bit more low-risk strategy, because when you look at, and I know we're going to go back to the Everton situation here. There's been a conversation with at least three clubs in the past 8 years. They had to do a deal with Wigan for Roberto Martinez. They had to do one with Southampton for Ronald Koeman. And then they obviously incurred the wrath of Watford for Silva. So if you are getting a manager of Silva's calibre, on a free, no ties, then that's a great bit of business, because, as I say, you get there, that seems like the best fit. Wilder obviously was left Sheffield United, well, was sacked by Sheffield United, because his pull, his influence at the club, in terms of positively influencing their results, had gone. Cooper, as I say, you don't really want to get bogged down in that. So I think for the fact that, you know, Calum went out and met Silva shows that they are invested in him from the start. This isn't a case of you come to us, it's a case of we'll come to you and we will try and convince you that coming to the Championship is the best route, because it will get you back into the Premier League. And I do think it would, this is why I think it will work, because I think Silva is the sort of coach who probably would thrive in a Championship environment, because there is more games, because there is more teams, because there is more scope to progress. I mean, you look at the playoffs in 2 years ago, Fulham beat Brentford quite comfortably in the end in the final, and everyone, the world and his wife, thought Brentford were going to do it, and there was going to be this great triumph of, you know, of a expansive football, and, you know, they had to wait another 12 months for it. That's fine for them. They're where they want to be. But Fulham can get up there, because Fulham can sneak into the playoffs. I don't think they'll be top two. The strength of the teams in and around the Championship this season, especially the ones who have come down, I think it'll make it tough for top two. But I think top six in the playoff positions is absolutely attainable, and it's just a case of how Silva sets up. If he sets up, if he tailors his game plan, as I say, to the 4-2-3-1 for the more defensive games, 4-3-3 for the ones where he can really unleash fury on teams, then I think it could work. And I think players that Fulham have, that we know they've got, I think he's already got a solid basis, and if he can add some more in this window, I think potentially we are going to see Fulham back up in the Premier League. And you know, I've always made it clear, I want to see Fulham back in the Premier League as often as possible. Similar to Norwich, they will go up and down, but you always welcome them back with open arms, because you know what you're going to get. And it's nice to have another team from coming into the Premier League, because we know the other team gets a lot of headlines and a lot of plaudits and a lot of, you know, generates a lot of traffic. Whereas I'd be like to see a team like Fulham, probably because I've got an affinity with Everton, because they are, you know, overshadowed by a team with a bigger reputation in this area of the city. You want to see the sort of the overshadowed team excel, because you have capability and they have all that history. So I think it could work. I generally think it could work, and I think Silva is probably, of the managers out there, I mean, how many managers have we seen linked with Tottenham and they've ended up with Nuno? I think Silva's a great fit.
Okay, and this goes back to, we're going to talk about the fact that he hasn't managed in 18 months. Do you think that is also a point to prove for him? Like you said, you mentioned that maybe he's used this time to learn from his mistakes, hopefully. And how it ended with Everton, here's like a fresh start for him. He's going to be in the Championship. He's hopefully going to have the tools to succeed and then get back to the Premier League. Does he have a chip on his shoulder? Could this be a good thing for Fulham? Could he have a point to prove here?
I think so, yeah. I think whenever a manager wants to get back to the former domain, as it were, I think they are doubly determined. And I think Silva, because he's been in the Premier League with three different clubs, and it was a bit of a tornado experience. Obviously, he went from Hull in the middle of, you know, the middle of a relegation dogfight, straight into Watford, and then a little bit of time out, and then straight into Everton. There hasn't been that much time to reflect on where he seems like the sort of manager who will look at games, he will watch them back, and there'll be some that'll be imprinted on his mind. It will be Norwich at home, it'll be Leicester away, it probably won't be the Merseyside derby hammering to Liverpool, because I think Liverpool were always going to win that game quite comfortably. I just think the players he had were, I don't think it was an organisational problem, I think it was a mentality issue then, and I think that was unfortunately because Everton had this loom hanging over them from wherever they went to Anfield. I don't think that'll be in his mind, but I think he will think back to, I'd say, the Divock Origi game where Everton really did hold on, and you thought actually a point here is not bad considering Liverpool were, you know, neck and neck with Man City in the title race. So I think he'll look at those games and he'll say, where do we go wrong here? Where do we go right here? So okay. In the Derby case, it'll be where do we go right? Okay. In the case, what do we do wrong? Leicester, why do we lose that game in the 94th minute? And you'd like to think he's that meticulous that he will go back and he will have made note, and then in the back of his mind, when these situations manifest, to get it for me, because they always do. But football is a game of patterns, and certain patterns do repeat themselves in various games. There's that much action, there's that many instances. Something will click in his head if he has done his homework, and he'll think, right, we need to do this differently. And he might have shut up shop a bit more. He might have tightened up defensively on the zonal marking. He might have found a way to handle set pieces. You just don't know. But you'd like to hope that if you've had this much time out, I know we haven't had much time to do stuff with a pandemic going on, but you'd like to think that way manager would at least have sat down with the video. He can't go anywhere.
Right, exactly.
He would have sat down with us and pointed out what's gone wrong, where it could have gone better, and how I stop this happening again. And that's why I think Marco Silva, if he has done his homework, if he is the manager I think he is, he will have learned from his experiences, and he will be able to implement that for him. It's just whether, I always have this doubt with managers, because you look at Roberto Martinez.
Yeah,
he hasn't learned anything different from when he was at Wigan or when he was at Everton. He just has better. With Fulham, he has probably slightly lesser quality players with the greatest respect to Fulham because they don't have the England goalkeeper, they don't have Charles.
Absolutely not.
But you'd have to think that the methods are still transferable. What he learned there, he can transfer to Fulham. It's just a case of he's going to have to be so tight on his mistakes and correcting them because there is going to be less margin for error.
Right, and that goes back to what we talked about earlier. If he learns from his mistakes and uses this past 18 months to his advantage, then this could be a very good situation for you. But again, I'm going to share this comment, Richard, because it goes to what we're talking about. Concern for me, this is from a Fulham supporter, Stefan, is that he has been out of the job for 18 months. We've already been talking about, you could potentially see this as an advantage, Richard, the fact that he's been out of football for this period of time to hopefully learn from his mistakes.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because we've got a similar situation here on Merseyside with obviously Rafael Benitez coming in at Everton.
Right.
Quite a controversial appointment, but something that stuck out for me was Benitez was gave an interview with the Times newspaper in England in May saying about how he wanted to come back into to Premier League management, how he'd been studying games and he's been watching a lot of games and studying them and how he can, you know, improve any team. So obviously he's looking at teams who are probably not going to be have a long-term manager, so probably Everton, probably Palace, probably Tottenham. He's probably looking at their games and saying, how do I improve these games? And you'd like to think that Silva is doing the same thing. You know, I mean, when we were down last year for a good 6 months at least and no one was going anywhere, there was no football on for at least 3 months, surely he must have sat there and dug out the videos from his analysts and gone, right, well, once you stop feeling sorry for yourself, you've got to get back on the horse. So sit down, stick a DVD in or whatever it is and look at these games, look at the patterns of play, and manages us, plays watch games differently to us because they can analyse the game differently, they read the game differently. So he will see things in the Norwich game when Everton lost 2-0 and think, I can see what's happening here, whereas most people wouldn't see it until it happens. So he probably think, I could have guarded against that by having moving players, you know, closing down players on the flank or you know, stopping their run through the middle and tracking the runner. There's things he could have improved on. So I think I understand Stefan's concern. You know, managers being able to work for a long time is concerning, but at the same time, managers who go straight back into a job and it's like, you know, they don't even catch a breath, that is risky. It doesn't always work. We've seen with Jose Mourinho, that does not always work. Yep. How many clubs has he been to? Had a modicum of success, not always tangible success. It was derailed because he's reverted to type. Silva's young enough and flexible enough, and it's interesting back here, friend of Mourinho's, that I feel like he'll have looked at Mourinho's career path, looked at how it's gone wrong and feel, I don't want that, and feel like he can guard against that. So I think reflection is very important for a manager like Silva, who is young enough to change his ways. People like Mourinho aren't, unfortunately, at their age of their career and this stage where jobs and, you know, it hasn't worked out. So I don't think the timeout will be an issue. It's how he's used it. It'll be the biggest factor. If he's learned from it, then great. If he hasn't, then it's going to be a very, very difficult season. But I'd like to think, you know, I do still have a strong amount of respect for Marco Silva.
Yeah.
I'd like to think he's learned from his mistakes.
Okay, excellent. Okay, here's a question that I know a lot of Fulham supporters are interested in, because there have been reports that he's bringing his backroom staff from Everton, including Luis Bohemorte, which is huge for Fulham supporters. Just in general, how do you rate his backroom staff?
They're quite understated, shall we say. I mean, I compare it with, obviously, Carlo Ancelotti, who brought in a lot of fitness coaches and so forth. And, you know, it's very similar set-up. Although you didn't know the names of the people. I mean, the only time we really noticed any change in the personnel was obviously when he lost his assistant, João Pedro Sousa, who went to Famalicão, who's a Portuguese Premier League team, in 2019. And that was when there was the turnover with Luis Bohemorte coming in. So in terms of obviously the personnel, we don't really know a great deal about them, because Silva is he's the lightning rod. He takes all the criticism. He takes all the you know credit as well. He doesn't really sort of delegate. Whereas when Carlo Ancelotti was here, we had Duncan Ferguson being promoted to assistant, who obviously everyone knew. Then his son was a coach as well. His son would give interviews. So you're getting input from a lot of people at the club, whereas Silva was the only real orchestrator, I'd say. I mean, Bohemorte did an interview when he came, but they were very rare. So, and obviously, Bohemorte's connection with Fulham is so well known. So, you know, a fan's favourite. But, yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was actually in Portugal when they announced Bohemorte was going to be Everton's assistant manager.
Right,
and I was racking my brain, and I thought, Bohemorte and Everton, I'm sure there's something, there's a stir. And then there was a, in 2000, I think it was one or two, there was a bit of a fiery game at Craven Cottage.
Yeah.
And I actually put the picture up, and someone just hit me back straight away and said, yeah, he'll do for us. He'll do for us. So, you know, that sort of dogs of war spirit. But, no, I think Bohemorte, you know, was clearly, you know, his bond with Silva's quite strong. Obviously, he can probably impress on Silva. This is the club you're going to be coming to, and it works quite well.
Exactly. And again, to the concern that Fulham supporters have about Silva and his history of leaving clubs and not staying that long, I go back to the hiring of Luis Bohemorte and being a Fulham, former Fulham player, Fulham legend. That has to have some weight, Richard. He has to know what he's getting himself into, because of who Bohemorte is, not only on his staff, but who he played for in the past and the love that he has for Fulham. So to take this job, I'm talking about for Silva, and bring on Bohemorte, he has to be invested in Fulham. I'm talking about Silva. You know, just from having Bohemorte on his staff, he has to buy in.
Yeah, and I think a big deal, you know, bringing in someone like Bohemorte. I mean, clearly the partnership worked at Everton. It just obviously didn't work out in terms of the results. Right. But, I mean, the way of performance is there, where you thought, I don't think you could really see Bohemorte's stamp on it, but clearly he's a good sounding board. And if he's coming on board to Fulham, which is obviously a club which still holds a great deal of affection for him.
Absolutely.
It's a real, why, if Silva does, I think, if Silva does a Carlo Ancelotti and, you know, jump ship at the next opportunity, that's going to affect badly on not just him, but Bohemorte as well. Because Bohemorte, unless Silva goes to another club and takes Bohemorte with him, Bohemorte can have to take the flak. And even then, I mean, we saw it with Carlo Ancelotti, his son had to take the flak for a few weeks because he jumped ship. So I think Silva's investing in one in who he clearly gets on well with on a personal level and a technical level as a coach, but also someone who's a Fulham legend. I think that's going to strengthen the motivation for Silva to do well, because he's going to think, I can't let him down. I can't let this club down. So I'm only seeing positives here.
Yeah, and that's why when I was heard that he was a part of the deal, I was like, okay, this to me really solidifies it for me. You know, and again, I was going to be honest with you, Richard. I was kind of, you know, again, I wasn't too sure about Silva. But then when Luis Bohemorte, I knew was part of the package, I'm thinking, okay, this is a good thing. Because like you said, his affection for the club, he had to put that on Silva, the importance of Fulham. And I think, okay, this could work now because he's on the staff. So I can't put even more stock into. I mean, I think this is huge. Luis Boamorte on his staff. So I'm glad that we talked about that. All right, here's something that we have to talk about. This is funny, and I want to give Eddie Middlebrook, I think, I just want to double check Eddie, because Eddie Middlebrook had this comment. I'm just going to share it here. Silva ball versus Parker ball. So under Parker, it was distinct style, Richard. And I got to tell you, over the course of two plus seasons, I dealt with it. I'm like, okay, fine. It got them to, like you said, back to the Premier League. But at times, I got to tell you, man, it was hard to watch. Now, Silva is completely different. He's more on the Jokanović side where it's attacking football. So let's talk about the difference between, we're going to call it Silva ball versus Parker ball.
Well, for the start, Silva ball, for all its flaws, I think it's a well-waved Parker ball, isn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, there's a bit more discipline to it, even, as I say, even with the issues of the in-game management. There's still a structurally, it's a lot more solid. It's just obviously the little about finger like set pieces and you know, in-game management when you're coming up against a more technically superior side, as we say, not always a better side, but technically superior on the day. Yeah. I mean, Parker ball, it's, you know, you can probably laugh at it now because obviously, you know, the die is cast and he's gone.
Yeah.
By the way, that was a strange one, wasn't it, Bournemouth? That was a very strange appointment.
Richard, let's talk about that a little bit because we are comparing Silva to Parker, and I do find it a little weird, you know, again, because they really went after him. They wanted him. I'm talking about Bournemouth. And nothing against Scott Parker, because Scott Parker did a job for Fulham, but in the end, again, he was a manager that really never changed his ways, and I didn't feel learned from his mistakes, and he had a distinct style and never reverted from it. So I'm trying to think of what Bournemouth are seeing in Scott Parker, because again, they're going to get Parker ball. And I know the fans of Bournemouth are hearing from the Fulham supporters and that they think that the Fulham supporters are salty. And I'm telling you, no, it really comes down to the style of play. We live through Parker ball. The Premier League has lived through Parker ball. So again, I'm curious why they went after him. Why do you think they went so hard after Scott Parker? I'm curious your view on that.
I think Bournemouth wanted an identity, because after they lost Eddie Howe, I think they wanted someone. Obviously, they had Jason Tindall in, but obviously it didn't really work. I've got to say, I mean, I think it was quite sensitive on Twitter earlier in the week about Fulham sort of buried bad news during Euro 2020, during a really pulsating game. And then Bournemouth buried similar bad news with the same person during another really exciting game. You know, it was almost like, I mean, I understand Fulham doing it because obviously Fulham wanted to get rid, you know, basically see off Parker.
Yeah.
And in terms of burying bad news, the only team who could have possibly buried worse news this week would have been Everton with their manager.
Right.
But Bournemouth, you'd think this would be a big grandstand announcement. Instead, they waited until 10 o'clock during one of the best games of the tournament. I mean, surely your social media would think, let's park this till 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Let's leave this now because this France Switzerland game is just going nuts. Let's not throw this in. Fulham, you knew why you were doing it, because you know you want to get rid of a manager who polarised the fan base and plays a style of football that's frustrated fans, as clearly as you've articulated.
Yeah.
But Bournemouth announcing it, I just thought this feels like a very much a frying pan fire situation, and they're trying to bury it under the guise of a major European tournament. It just doesn't make sense to me. And
no.
To be honest, if I could easily see Fulham taking 6 points off Bournemouth next season. Easily. Because I think Parker ball can be beaten, especially because Bournemouth don't have the players, technically. I mean, you look at people like the Cordova Reed.
Yeah.
Incredible talents. If you've got players like him, they will, if they're used in the right way, they will rip through Bournemouth, I promise you. I mean, this will come back on me in a few months' time and Bournemouth might win 2-1 or something. But if you've got players who Silva can drill, who can play his way, and he can learn from his mistakes, as we've touched upon before, I could easily see Parker ball getting swayed by Fulham and by Silva ball. I do think it's because Bournemouth, unfortunately, and we saw it last season, two seasons ago in the Premier League, you know, their style of play has a limited shelf life. Under Eddie Howe.
Right.
I know the field goal factor won't last as long. I think it'll probably be half a season if they're lucky, by which point you probably have lost to Fulham at least in the Championship. They're probably going to have some few cup competitions, but they probably won't care about that. I don't think Fulham will be sneaking into the Premier League, potentially. Bournemouth will be sneaking into the Premier League if they're going to stake their current structure on Scott Parker's philosophy. I think Parker will, as we saw, merits. We saw it against Everton, with that 3-2 defeat. But at the same time, one small doesn't make a summer, and I feel like you can't have that many successes with that style of play. Whereas I think if Silva does win, and
it's fine margins, Richard. He plays to fine margins. Again, he doesn't give himself much width he wants to win 1-0. I mean, that's his strategy. Strategy is to get ahead and hold on for dear life and play very conservatively. And I'm just telling you, I don't know how this is going to go over once the Bournemouth supporters see it. And I think that, again, if you play a certain way, you can actually beat a Scott Parker side. And I hope you're right, my friend. But to end the show, I want to talk about this because you brought up something very interesting. You and I were messaging back and forth. You've already mentioned one player, Bobby Decker Dover-Reed, that you think could really benefit from Silva's coaching and style of play. Because again, one of my criticisms of Parker was, I don't think that a lot of the players that he got the most out of, I don't think he played to their strengths. I'm glad that you brought up Bobby Decker Dover-Reed, because I think this is a player that could really flourish in a Silva style. And then, of course, you've already mentioned this. Again, we have Anthony Robinson. I know teams are going to go after him, but he's a type of fullback that I think would really flourish in a Silva style, along with Kenny Tete. These are two fullbacks that we're already seeing speculation of teams after, but they might want to stay to play in Silva's style of play. Richard, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you mentioned Anthony Robinson, because obviously he's a player who had a prior connection with Everton. Not under Marco Silva, unfortunately, but he's in around that sort of Roberto Martinez era, David Moyes era.
Yeah.
So he'll have an understanding of those two extremes, because Everton didn't always play the same style, but there was the core ethos is to be defensively solid in the main, and that was something that Moyes laid down, and Roberto Martinez really reap the benefits of in his first season. So Robinson can probably tailor his game to that. And as you say about players, clubs will try and pick off Fulham players now they are back down in the Championship. I think that happens with a lot of teams that go back down. I'm sure there'll be people knocking on the door for a few Sheffield United players. Sander Berge will probably be called by a few of the sort of the mid to lower tier teams in the Premier League. But I think if you've got a good manager, and his track record isn't great in the Premier League. One top half finish, sacked when he's in the relegation zone, sacked when Watford were hovering above the relegation places.
Right.
You can probably say, and you can understand people wanting to jump ship in that situation. But if Fulham do not have the financial pressure to sell, which we know they don't because of the ownership,
they're
going to get parachute payments. They can hold on to a lot of these players. It's only whether these players want to stick around. But if they have a manager who is able to show he's improved on what he did at Watford and at Everton, and even to a lesser degree Hull City, because Hull City, don't forget, beat Liverpool.
Yeah.
They took points off some of the big Premier League clubs as well. So Hull City were no slouch team. They were just, unfortunately, the damage had been done earlier in the season, and he faced a bit of a losing battle, and the margin for error were practically zero for him. So, you don't give him a free pass there, but you give him a bit of mitigation. At Watford, it obviously unraveled, but there were signs of progress there. At Everton, you saw what he did with Richarlison, Luka Digne. If you can go into there and say to people like Robinson, look what I did to Luka Digne, you can be that player as well. You've got to have the technical ability, obviously, but he could do that. If you can sell it to them, I think a lot of players will stick around. And I think a lot of the more exciting players, as we've touched upon already, will stick around at Fulham. And I think that's a thing. I don't think Fulham will be a team that Premier League clubs or even European clubs potentially are picking off players from this season, because if there's a manager who's got a clear blueprint, who's got a vision and a great game plan that he can stick to, and he can sharpen up and tighten up if he needs to, I think players will respond to that. It depends on what happens on the training ground, the move around the club, the sort of the temperament. A lot of these factors that we see with a lot of managers. But I think Silva is young enough, as I say, to learn the error of his ways Taylor is getting back and still be one of the, probably not, maybe not a leading coach, because he's never going to be a Pep Guardiola or a Jürgen Klopp or a Thomas Tuchel or even a Carlo Ancelotti. He's never going to be in that category, but he could probably be on that sort of second or third tier, the sort of you know, the best of the rest, I think. But he has to show that, and I think if he can show that, the players will respond to it. And I think we saw, you know, as I say, a couple of players responded to it at Everton, but only the ones really he brought in. Because he's coming in to Fulham, where it's a clean slate, and it's not just, you know, a high turnover of managers. I know. Obviously, you know, we saw Jurcanovic turfed out quite early on a few seasons ago. But, you know, the turnover of the managers isn't as frenetic as it has been at Everton. So I think players will respond to that. I think they will respond to a manager who comes in with new ideas and with a different style of play. And maybe the ones who were there from Jurcanovic's time will resonate with them. So I think in terms of keeping players to stick around, in terms of convincing players to come to the club, I think he's got a really good chance compared to Parker. I mean Scott Parker, but let's be brutally honest about him. I've never understood the obsession with Scott Parker in this country. I've got to be honest, and I find it so strange.
Richard, I don't mean to slate him on his way out, but the media, for some reason, I'm not saying you, have protected this guy. And again, no one really asked him the tough questions. Peter Rutzler is one who works for The Athletic, did a really good job covering Fulman and covering Scott Parker. But beyond him, for whatever reason, they have not really asked him the tough questions. And he has been just pushed up. He's been catapulted up a level where I don't think he deserves, Richard. I've never understood the love fest there is with Scott Parker as a head coach. I've never understood why they've been putting him on a pedestal. I've never understood it. So I'm curious, why do you think that is by the media?
To me, it seems it's a bit of Frank Lampard syndrome, isn't it? Although Frank Lampard did at least have a very stellar career. And this goes back about 10 years. I always find it really curious that Scott Parker was voted by journalists in this country as Footballer of the Year
in a season
where he went down. He was relegated to Chelsea with West Ham, and it's like he was given the England captaincy as well, and it's like, it's stuff like that. You go, why? It does seem to me a sort of this English exceptionalism. I do feel like if someone like, I mean, you look at it now, you look at, you know, all the leading pundits in this country, most of them, with the exception of probably one or two, obviously Roy Keane, Graham Souness, they're all ex-England internationals. But Frank Lampard, they couldn't wait to wheel him out on TV this summer. I've got to say, I think probably comparing Frank Lampard and Scott Parker is very harsh. You know, Frank Lampard, with one hand tied around his back, did get Chelsea into the Champions League last season.
Yeah.
2 seasons ago.
Right.
It just unravelled the last season. This season just gone. So I think Lampard obviously was promoted because of you know, he did a half decent job at Derby. Scott Parker has never really struck me as a player or as a coach. He's never really struck me as exceptional in any way. You could say Lampard's legacy meant he got an easy run at coaching, maybe a few cushy jobs further up the ladder. Scott Parker, beyond winning that Football Writers Award, beyond, you know, being the kid in the McDonald's advert 20-odd years ago.
Yeah, I'm
genuinely struggling to see what he really, since he left Charlton, when he was, you know, touted as being, you know, this new star, I've not seen it, I've not understood it, I've never bought into it. And by the way, I've seen players on Merseyside who have been tipped as the next big thing, and it's never happened. I've seen players who have been overhyped on Merseyside. I mean, I won't name names, but there was a few in the Liverpool team last season, there was a few in the Everton team last season, and I looked at it and thought, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Good players, yeah, but I don't get the eulogising over them.
Yeah.
And it happens a lot. You know, I've seen players at other clubs, and you look at it and you go, I just don't get it. But Scott Parker is the epitome of, I just don't get it, because he's had a career of very unspectacular. I mean, okay, fine, he went to Chelsea, okay, well, we'll give him that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Glenn Johns went to Chelsea. You know, I mean, you know, waiting for the line of, well, he went to Chelsea, so he must be good. So, yeah. I mean, I know we're picking apart his career here, but
Scott Parker
seemed like a bit of a samey option in the same way. And I don't think it's coincidence. He reminds me of Alan Kerr, obviously was his manager at Charlton.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, fated because he's English, fated because he's, you know, seen as a nice guy, fated because he's, you know, fair to middling. And occasionally, you know, he might get a job higher up the line. But obviously now that's transferred into Parker's play, into his coaching career.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm glad to see it's not just me who sort of doesn't understand the love Parker gets in this country from the media.
I've been speaking out about it. And, again, listen, I want to give Parker credit for what he did at Fulham. He got Fulham promoted. He deserves a lot of credit for that. He deserves for, you know, in a way, even though I didn't agree with believing in his beliefs, he stuck to it. But I've never really heard him being challenged, Richard, the way that I would expect someone to get challenged. Other managers get challenged. Is it because he speaks well to the media? He knows the media? An ex-player, like you said? I just don't know. He gets a free ride, and he got a free ride when he was at Fulham, when basic questions needed to be asked to him about his style of play, and I would never, like I said, except for Peter Rutsler, who did a good job, I would never hear the national media really pick him apart where they really deserve to. Why did Fulham fall apart in the end? Are you telling me Scott Parker had nothing to do with it, Richard? Of course he did. Of course he did.
This is the thing, though, isn't it? Like, I mean, you look at you kind of bitch. I mean, I remember when I was at that Tottenham, when they were at Wembley and they played Fulham, and this was Fulham after they just come up. And I thought Fulham gave a decent account of themselves. They just unfortunately came up against Harry Kane, who decided to break his August
I remember that
slump. And I thought Fulham had done well. I thought they gave a good account of themselves. But, you know, the slate of Jokanovic, I always found very strange. Whereas Scott Parker, because he's got, you know, because you can soundtrack his post-match interviews to a street album, because he's got a the cheeky chappy sort of persona, Scotty Parker and all this nonsense, he gets a free ride. But again, I feel like that is the Lampard syndrome on an extreme scale, because at least Lampard did have some credentials in, obviously, I mean, he didn't have any credentials to get the Derby job, but when he got there, he showed his worth. And same with Chelsea, he just obviously unravelled. But Scott Parker feels like, you know, it feels like he's getting a leg up from the media because of who he was as a player. And who he was as a player was essentially like, I'm just seeing that comment now, that's about right. He did get a free ride from the media. And, you know, I think it's because, you know, because the media thought we can make a joke out of him with these, you know. You know the clip I'm talking about, don't you? The Pokemon interview was to sync up to like a grime song from the streets, you know. That's what he became. He's someone who, you know, you can have a laugh about, you can, you know, cut his English, we're not going to slag him off, but you know, when he does fall on his sword, the outcry is, you know, oh, well, good English manager out on his ear. And this sort of mentality kicks in with people like Sam Allardyce, Alan Pardew, Kermitry when he was at West Ham. You know, you go down the list, English managers get a free ride, especially ones who have had playing careers in the not too distant past. So I think Parker got off very lightly at Fulham. I think, you know, had fans been back in their entirety last season, I think they would have let him have it, and I think you wouldn't blame them, because he doesn't play a style which gets results or is easy on the eye. It's very frustrating to watch. It does give teams like Everton a bit of a fright, but in the main, you know, I remember when he won at Anfield, you know, he beat a Liverpool team that was on its knees. It wasn't a great triumph by any means. It was a very scrappy 1-0 win, and it touches upon what you said, clinging on for dear life. They scored in the first half, and they parked the bus for the remaining 48 minutes.
Yep.
That's not how you play football. Sometimes, and this is where silver might have some benefits, sometimes you have to go breakneck, you have to go back and forth, you have to win games 4-2 or 3-2 or, you know, draw 3-0. So, you know, I think Fulham fans, apart from winning at Anfield, results were not so spectacular. And, you know, if fans had been in, I think Parker probably would have definitely got both barrels from the fans in the final months of the season, because Liverpool aside, what really did he do?
Well, again, to give him credit, the Leicester City victory away was impressive at the King Power. He also beat Everton. You know, again, we did the Merseyside double, which is bizarre, Richard. We did. We did beat Everton at Goodison Park, which was an incredible feat. But
I was just going to stop you there. Because I was at that game. It wasn't an incredible feat. I'm sorry to. I don't want to destroy my credibility with Fulham fans. But Everton were not great. I've got to say, credit to Fulham. Great results. Great result, no question. But I think, you know, the clinging off of their life probably worked better at Anfield because Liverpool were hammering the door down because that is what Liverpool do.
But
credit where it's due. You know, he did get a win. He did win on both sides of Stanley Park. That is impressive. But I've got to say, with mitigation, that Everton team, I mean, I've got to be honest with you. My abiding memories of Goodison Park when they leave Goodison Park will be the games this season, because in the second half of the season, because I left Goodison most nights, because you're always like games for some reason, feeling cold, deflated, and just like in disbelief of the way they played. So it's not a great, I'll give them credit, but at the same time, Everton weren't great, but I will say, his Liverpool strategy did work quite well, but I won't give him credit for that. But the results, I'll give you credit.
Right, you know, and again, for the results, but again, when you look back at it, and, you know, again, maybe all that was fool's gold, Richard, when we look back at Parker's reign, because my thought was, okay, if you can beat Everton, you can beat Liverpool, you can beat Leicester City, why can't you beat Leeds United? And they couldn't. So, again, that goes back to the players, but also to Parker. Anyways, I'm sorry, Fulham supporters, I'm doing a Parker bashing at the end, but I had to scratch that itch. I'm sorry, I had to scratch the itch. But let's end here, Richard. I just want to get your overall thoughts. Do you think this could work for Fulham with Silva? Do you really see, you know, again, let's start where we began talking about Silva. Can it work?
I think it can. It just depends on, as I say, recruitment will be key. Because, I can't claim to have, deep extensive knowledge of Fulham's squad issues and where they need to improve. I mean, obviously, clearly, the game plan is obviously the biggest thing because we've just slated Parker ball for a good few minutes. But, you know, in terms of personnel, where do you feel like Fulham are probably short or on quality or depth maybe in terms of options in positions?
Well, I would say right now it would really come down to the decision that they're going to have to make at striker. You know, again, will Mitro stay? I think they definitely need another striker, but honestly, for me, Richard, a huge key is going to be central midfield. Will Kearney be Kearney? Kearney's now getting into the latter stages of his career. I think, you know, if I'm Marco Silva, I look at that role. I look at Parker off my head. Look at the Kearney position and how he will handle central midfield. I think that will be key for him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's going to depend on how he sets up, because if he's got the options to play, if he's got like exceptional ball-winning midfielders in force as he break up the play, like he had in that first season at Everton with Idrissa Gueye, who was one of the best enforcers in the Premier League, in my opinion, and I think the stats backed it up as well at the time. You know, he might be a bit more inclined to play the 4-2-3-1 on the regular, which obviously suits Fulham. Obviously, if Mitrovic is still there, that's going to work out quite well because he can still be the focal point. But there will be times when he will have to just play a flat out 4-3-3. But I do feel like because of the cage nature of the Championship, the chances to play 4-3-3, unless you have a really, unless as I say, he's learned his mistakes, he's analysed everything to the nth degree, and he's made a mental note of, I can fix this situation where we can see from a set piece, or I can fix this where we're under the cosh in the last 15 minutes and we can see in the stoppage time. Unless he's fixed all that, we might see 4-2-3-1 more often because of the nature of the Championship. I do feel like teams like Bournemouth, I know I don't really want to go down that route again, but Bournemouth, Sheffield United, just the teams who've gone down recently, I feel like they're still living in that Premier League bubble. I know Bournemouth probably did quite well, but I feel like they're the sort of games where the 4-3-3 might be beneficial. But I'm thinking teams like Swansea are going to be tough. They're going to be a team you're going to need to play 4-2-3-1 against, because Steve Cooper has done a great job there, as we saw. So, you have to be able to go toe-to-toe with teams who will cause problems, and that's where that system works. So, if Mitrovic sticks around, if Tom Kearney is really on it, and if you can maybe bring in another ball-winning midfielder who can, dovetail quite perfectly with Kearney, then that'll work quite well in both 4-3-3 and 4-2-3-1. But, we've kind of neglected to say this. Silva, when he plays a 4-3-3, it's very narrow. You know, there isn't, because the there isn't that width So, you know, the game cancels goes largely through the middle. You know, you're not really using the vast expanses, which, okay, I mean, that might be beneficial in the championship, because not every championship club, I know they have to have certain pitch regulations, not every championship side has the same freedom in terms of, you know, and down the side as, say, Everton, Liverpool, Man United, you know, even sort of teams like Tottenham, West Ham, even, right, you know, Sheffield United, you know, so there are going to be, I mean, Craven Cottage is a classic example of that. It's not the most expansive pitch.
No,
but
it's not.
It can work, but that can work as home advantage. That can be brilliant, because if he plays an 4-3-3, or he plays that 4-2-3-1 where everything is, you know, fed through the middle, it can work. So I think there are more upsides and downsides to Silva's appointment. So,
okay,
I mean, I do believe Fulham could be a top 6 team in the championship this season. And then, you know, who knows from there? It might all, you know, he might fall short of the playoffs, but he'll have done enough to come back stronger the next season. And you never know. It might work. I just fear that if he hasn't learned his mistakes, we're going to end up in 12 months' time talking about where it went wrong.
Okay. Very good there. Very good there, my friend. Listen, we went very long. Thank you, Richard. We went almost an hour and a half. We went an hour and 20 minutes. So before I go, just thank you so much for doing this. Please tell everyone how they can follow you on Twitter and how that they can see what you're writing.
Yeah, so my Twitter's just RichardBuxton_, and I post most of my stuff on Facebook now, my articles, because Twitter's just a bit mad, isn't it, with all opinions and stuff. So I write quite a few columns and do a lot of interviews and stuff, so they appear on my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/rbuxtonmedia, or one word.
Okay, excellent. Well, Richard, thank you so much for joining me today to talk about Marco Silva. Before we go, I just want to mention one last time to please subscribe to the Cottage Talk YouTube channel. We are live on the YouTube channel. Just started that about 3 to 4 months ago. It's going to take a while building up, so please, I really appreciate if you could subscribe to our YouTube channel. Okay, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Cottage Talk. For my very special guest, Richard Buxton, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for watching and listening to Cottage Talk. It's the 90th minute. And all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.